It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
Start on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
His house, the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner, PJ Tucker. Gordon by Gordon Branch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What is up? Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I am your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can catch me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. And of course, our show is also on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And you guys know the drill by now. If you appreciate what we do here at Locked On Rockets, do me a huge favor. Subscribe to us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, drop us a review, leave us some stars. I would sincerely appreciate it. For today's show, we will be joined by Anthony Duckett from Space City Scoop, the site co-expert over at Space City Scoop. Really smart guy, really great basketball mind, really great Rockets guy, and been wanting to bring him on the podcast for a while. So we'll bring him in, and we're going to do this kind of domino effect as we follow the signings and trades and deals that basically turned the team into what it is today. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and get to Anthony. Hey, Anthony, how's it going today, man?
Well, good. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm a little burnt out of this whole quarantine situation. I'll tell you what, I'm getting a little stir crazy, and I definitely miss NBA basketball, as I'm sure you do as well, right?
Yeah, you and me for sure, man. I'm right there with you.
Now, so before we dive into this kind of domino effect and kind of looking at some of the trades, the signings, the transactions, or maybe the transactions that didn't happen or the signings or draft picks that didn't happen that kind of led to this current version of this Rockets team that we've all come to know and love with the Beard and Brody at the helm, before we dive into all that, I want to get a little bit of more information about you, kind of some of your background, where you got your start, how you started writing for Space City. So tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, sure. So I've actually been, I would say I've been following the Rockets intently since 2002. And my fandom led to my interest in covering the team. I had actually reached out to several different blog sites. And one of the ones that I just happened to latch on with was Space City Scoop. And that actually was an interesting time I joined the site because that was in June of last year. So last offseason before the Chris Paul, before we traded Chris Paul away. So I joined right before all the Jimmy Butler, well, the second go round, Jimmy Butler, last offseason. And, overall, I've enjoyed writing for the site. I first was a contributor, now I've become a co-expert. I like it because it's a chance for me to put my fandom to use when it comes to expressing my thoughts and reporting news and things like that. So yeah.
Good deal, man. All right. And so I'm kind of assuming here, are you Houston born and bred? You grew up here?
I am.
Okay. All right. There we go. So you've been following the Rockets for quite some time. That's good. I love how many different, media personalities there are that are Houston born and bred, whether it's, online publications or whether it's radio or TV. There's a lot of different people that grew up here in Houston that are local and are now covering the team, which I think is one of the coolest things.
For sure. Yeah. No doubt about it.
All right. So we're going to set the table basically, right? So we're going to start with the summer 2010. So this is post the 2009-2010 season, which was kind of a down year for the Rockets, right?
For sure. I
mean, you look back to the starting night, opening night of the 2009-2010 season. I don't know if you have this pulled up. Can you guess the starting lineup from that team off the top of your head?
I don't have it pulled up. I would guess we'd be looking at something like Brooks. I would say Brooks, McGrady. Was Battier on that team?
Battier was there.
Scola was on that team.
There you go.
And I don't think we had Yao still at the time.
We did not.
Was it Chuck Hayes?
It was Chuck Hayes. However, there was no McGrady in the starting lineup. It was Trevor Ariza.
Okay, okay.
So this was his first go around. They had just nabbed up Trevor Ariza for the first time. And so that starting lineup, which is, you know, hindsight 2020, you think of a starting lineup with Brooks, Ariza, Battier, Hayes at the four, and then Scola, or however you want to flip them, Hayes and right. Scola as your power forward center combo. That's a very strange team. And then off the bench, you had Kyle Lowry, Carl Landry, like that was a
Kevin Martin.
It was a weird looking. No Kevin Martin yet. Not yet.
Okay.
So okay. that was kind of a weird looking team. And so we kind of, you know, they had this down year, but then they get into the off season, right? And that off season is when they start making all sorts of deals. And let's see, the very first one that comes to mind is the Courtney Lee trade. So that Courtney Lee trade, they end the Trevor Ariza experiment, right?
Right.
They had 1 year of Trevor Ariza, and they were like, yeah, this just isn't working. And so they deal Ariza to the Hornets. The Pacers throw in Troy Murphy, which he winds up landing on the Nets. The Nets send Courtney Lee to the Rockets. And the Hornets also dealt out who they deal. Darren Collison and James Posey land in Indiana.
Right.
So that's, I think, the first major trade, our first major domino going on here. But the next biggest thing, right, there wasn't a whole lot going on that offseason. Like the Rockets kind of they signed Brad Miller. I'm like looking down this list, there's not really anything else going on that offseason of note.
Well, the only other one to a lesser degree was a draft pick, drafting Patrick Patterson with Eric Bledsoe on the board still.
That is a good one. We'll make that. So that's our first official what if scenario. So, I mean, cause Pat didn't really have an immediate impact, whereas Eric Bledsoe probably could have been some of that, you know, much needed guard depth on those Rockets teams. So how do you think that, I mean,
well, the challenge with, you know, especially looking back, you know, a decade later, is that we now have the luxury of knowing the end result.
Yeah, you definitely.
Know, we're talking about a draft pick. There's never a guarantee that a player would develop the same in the same system. And then Bledsoe, if I remember right, Bledsoe was he went to the Clippers first. And then he went to, I want to say, Phoenix, where I think he got a max contract there in Phoenix. And then from there, he went to Milwaukee. So it's not like Bledsoe was a sure thing anyways. And it's interesting to look back on it, because I think Bledsoe was a sixth man at Kentucky too, right? That year he played at UK.
That one I'm a little fuzzy on, unfortunately.
I think that they were loaded. I think he was on the team with Cousins, John Wall, which also had Pat Patterson. So – you know, but the point being, you know, it's always interesting and fun to say, well, what if this player gets picked, taken ahead of this player? But that Rockets team also had quite a bit of guard depth, if I recall right. The Rockets team going into 2010-11.
Because they still had Brooks at that point. They still had Kyle Lowry, who hadn't been dealt yet. They did have a fair bit of depth there. Right. So that kind of makes a little bit more sense as to why. And the thing is, too, is Pat kind of falls into that mold of the power forwards that Daryl Morey has been known to draft and fall in love with. Those 6'8", 6'9", you know, stretch the floor a little bit. Like that's the prototypical Daryl Morey power forward.
For sure.
We've definitely seen our fair share of those guys over the years. But kind of rolling through, so we've got that one leading into that season from that draft, which isn't on my draft page. So that's my mistake right there, because it's not up on my 2010-2011 basketball reference page, because it actually happened at the end of this
2010 season.
Yeah, there it is. So that's why I don't have it there. Okay. Now
it's
I see
good.
It. In fact, it's literally the very last option. Now that I have it pulled up, drafted Patrick Patterson in the first round, 14th pick overall. There it is.
But yes,
so as that rolls along, right, we have that Courtney Lee trade that we already mentioned. And Courtney Lee was I love Courtney Lee's time with the Rockets. I don't know how you felt about him.
Yeah, I did too. I mean, he was a solid 3-and-D player. He was kind of brought in during the changing of the guard. The Rockets were kind of undergoing a rebuild. And again, Courtney Lee was a guy, he was a classic 3-and-D player. That's what the Rockets definitely needed at that time. One of the things they definitely needed, because if I recall right, the only other 3-and-D player we could say they had emphatically was Battier, right?
It was. You know, he hadn't been dealt yet at that point, and that's actually coming up here in just a second. So don't get the, you know, for all the fans that remember this deal, don't get your hearts, you know, hung up on Battier too hard, because we're getting ready to trade him as we're rolling through, reenacting all the Rockets transactions. Battier is on the chopping block here soon. Yeah. So kind of looking at it, you're right. You know, he's the 3-and-D guy, and he's a guy that, you know, I kind of, when he was on the chopping block in New York, I kind of wanted the Rockets to try and make a play for him to bring him back into the fold. Unfortunately that didn't work out, but as we're looking down now, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, also on the flip side, you know, like you mentioned, we traded Ariza. Really, when we brought Ariza in, I kind of got the feeling that we were trying to make him our star. Definitely trying to give him an increased role from when he was with the I think he was at the Lakers before.
Yeah, he won his first chip with the Lakers, his only chip, I should say.
Right. So and he was a solid role player for them, rotational player. So when we brought him in here, we were trying to give him a bigger role, and it just doesn't always work out like that, you know?
And we will continue our conversation with Anthony following all the trades and deals that the Rockets have made over the years, coming up in just a second, so you guys don't go anywhere. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting with Anthony Duckett of Space City Scoop as we roll through all these signings and deals and what-if scenarios. So we'll get back to that right now. It doesn't. And I do remember that it was very forced with Ariza his first go around, because we were trying to turn him into something that he really wasn't, you know, this go-to offensive guy. And that's never been his skill set. You know, right. Rockets fans who maybe don't remember him from the first go around, it was a lot of the same as his second go around. And I never had confidence in Trevor Ariza driving to the basket. I just didn't.
Right.
He never quite had like the tightest handle on the ball, and he was your prototypical 3-and-D guy. And that's what he excelled at. And, you know, he had a great career here in Houston doing that.
For sure.
And he's had long career doing that elsewhere as well.
Right.
but one guy too, that we don't want to forget about is, December 15th, 2010, there was a 3-team trade that landed Terrence Williams on the Rockets. And thinking back to Terrence Williams, he was another guy too that was supposed to have this, you know, he had this huge upside, this high potential, and he never really panned out, right?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, so for Terrence Williams was, you know, if I remember, I think he was at Louisville, right? Is that where he played college ball at, Louisville?
I want to say you're correct.
Well, the reason why I say that is because I remember when he was at Louisville, he was viewed as like this all-around player, you know, a player who didn't have the best shot selection, but a player who could, you know, fight on the glass, you know, battle on the boards, a player who could get his teammates involved, facilitator. And he was viewed as a player that would either win you the game or lose you the game based on his shot selection. But he had a massive upside, and after I think he only played one full season before we made the trade. And at this point, the Rockets were, I think, 10-15. So it makes sense, you know, you get a first round pickup for Terrence Williams, thinking maybe this guy, you know, it's still just a year and a half removed from school. Maybe this guy still has the upside, you know, and maybe he can help our team, you know, rally during the season.
And, you know, I thought, if I'm remembering the comps correctly, I kind of thought he was. If I'm remembering this correctly, because this is, you know, we're going on a decade ago.
Yeah.
You know, I'm neck deep in high school. I'm a freshman. It's a strenuous year. And if I remember the comps correctly, I remember thinking he was supposed to be like a Corey Maggette type almost, like not that great of an outside shooter, you know, had a good handle, athletic, could get to the rim, kind of thing. And so I was excited about that. And, you know, it just never really lived up to the hype, unfortunately.
Yeah. Released him like maybe 2 years.
So
if that,
yeah. Well, and then as we're, you know, there's not much else that goes on for a couple months there. That was December 15th, 2010, and then there's the two big trades, right? And this kind of changed the entire look of the Rockets just a couple months down the line. They trade Battier and Ish Smith to the Memphis Grizzlies for Damari Carroll, ding, ding, another former Rocket, Hashim Thabeet, and a 2013 first-round draft pick, which was later used in a very important trade. And then they also traded Aaron Brooks to the Suns for Goran Dragic and a 2011 first-round draft pick.
What I thought was interesting about that is that 8-31. So you figure, okay, you know, even if we make the playoffs, are we really going to be a legitimate, you know, contender? So it made sense at that point. Battier was 32 years old. It made sense to try to see what you can get for him. And I think we had recalled Ish Smith up from the G League, if I want to say. You know, like you mentioned earlier, losing Battier is a fan favorite. Battier has some classic battles against Kobe, man. But we did get our first round pick back in the at that time, they were competing, they were contending. You know, they were a 50-win team year in and year out. So likely that was going to be a late round pick, but you still got to pick. Now, on the Dragic trade, I view that as really kind of a key move because, you know, you traded Aaron Brooks. That was kind of a dice roll. Brooks had just won most improved player the year before that. You get Dragic, 24-year-old Goran Dragic. He was a backup. I think he only was getting 18 minutes a game there in Phoenix. But he had a true shooting percentage of 56.6%. And he shot 39.4% from deep the year before. So he's averaging 8 points a game, 3 assists a game, 18 minutes. So it makes sense, you know, from Maury's standpoint, to flip Brooks for a 24-year-old Dragic, and you also got a first-round pick. Really good move. Really good move.
Yeah, and so, you know, it is a very Daryl Morey move to, you know, take that risk on a guy who, you know, really – he was showing some promise, but hadn't, you know, been given a big enough stage yet. And we know exactly what he was able to accomplish here in Houston once he was kind of given that starting role and given, you know, a chance to really shine in this system. And, you know, I think back to one, it's funny too, to me that, you know, Battier gets traded from the Grizzlies to the Rockets and then gets traded back to the Grizzlies. Like, I always find situations like that a little funny.
Right.
And, you know, I'm also really happy that down the line, Battier was able to, you know, sign with the Heat and win a ring over there. Battier is one of my all-time favorite players. I don't know for about sure. You, but I love that guy.
Yeah, no, likewise. And not only did he just sign with the Heat and win a ring, I mean, he was a key player for that Heat team. I mean, he was a, you know, again, classic 3-and-D player. I mean, I don't know if the Heat – I mean, they certainly were loaded, you know, with the star trio of Bosh, Wade, and LeBron. But, you know, what we find time and time again is that it's those, you know, others, those role players that tend to swing the balance in you winning a title. And Battier was a big part of that team.
Definitely. Absolutely. He had no small role, that's for sure. And so it kind of, as we're passing that kind of big trade deadline deal, there wasn't really much else that went on that year. Again, this was – you know, they're in the midst of this rebuild. They're really trying to, you know, find some semblance of an identity after the Tracy McGrady, Yao Ming era. And right. We make it to the 2011 draft. And this is our next kind of, and this one's a pretty big what if scenario.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely. You
know, one where the Rockets drafted Marcus Morris 14th overall with Kawhi following immediately after at 15, right?
Yep.
And I don't know about it. See, and here's my thing with these what ifs is you look at a guy like Kawhi who, you know, he was viewed as largely, you know, a defensive player coming in, and that makes sense. You know, his offensive game wasn't nearly as polished.
Right.
And you wonder, did the Spurs really turn him into what he is now, or would he have become that regardless? And I think that's the biggest question.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that is the biggest question. Again, you know, we do have the advantage looking back at this point from this view because we know kind of the end result. But, I mean, it is a big what if. If the Rockets were able to get Kawhi Leonard, the player that he, you know, developed into, you know, how much different would that team have been? But, again, at the same time, you know, would he have developed the exact same in this system? Or, like you said, did the Spurs – are they to, you know, attribute to his you know, development with his offensive game, his shooting, right?
Yeah, and I mean, but the one thing that was that could never be questioned about Kawhi is his work ethic. Was a guy who came in and he fit the mold of that San Antonio franchise so well because of his work ethic and how much time he spent putting in, you know, developing his shot, getting his game to the point where he, you know, when he's not load managing, you know, he'd be a year in, year out MVP candidate, you know, right up there with James Harden and LeBron and Giannis every single year.
No doubt about it.
I think that the load management definitely kind of puts a ding in his MVP resume, unfortunately, but he's definitely a guy that, and dude, imagining what Kawhi Leonard and James Harden together would have been able to do. Now, obviously it's a big what if, and James wasn't on the Rockets at this point. So maybe that, you know, this domino effect, this butterfly effect doesn't quite pan out with James Harden becoming a Houston Rocket. So I wouldn't change things, you know, based on how things look right now, the fact that the Rockets are sitting on James Harden, Russell Westbrook, I wouldn't go back and change anything.
Right.
But it is fun to think about having the beard and the claw on the same team.
Well, that's true, no doubt about it. But one thing that's also, I would say, an interesting question is, if we draft Kawhi and he doesn't quite develop as quick as he did within San Antonio, do we end up trading him before he becomes that star, right?
That's a good point because the Rockets have you know, they've had a history of not, I guess, maybe pulling the trigger or not giving enough time to some of their young guys to develop.
Right.
You know, and we'll see that coming up here soon. Sure. As many people will remember, there's a, on one of these pages coming up soon, there's a Robert Covington has been waived tag, and that one, that one stings a little bit.
Yep. But you know what? Going back to that draft, you know, one of the better picks, I think, of that draft was we get Chandler Parsons in the second round. I mean, you don't often get a contributor. I mean, Chandler Parsons was, I think, our second leading scorer for like 2 years or so, right?
He was a pivotal part of the team. You know, he and that team with – it was that first year with Harden where it was him, Parsons, and Jeremy Lin were like the big three of that team.
Right.
and that was just – and they were all so young at that point and fresh-faced. Yep. And, you know, looking back on some of these younger versions of this Rockets team, it's always fun to see, you know, some of those distinct memories. And I know that, you know, Jeremy Lin has, you know, has had his ups and downs with the team. You know, he had the end of that Portland Trailblazers series is always kind of a tough one, thinking about, you know, the issues that he had at the end of that series and just,
for sure. Yeah.
But overall, you know, I still have so many fond memories of those different guys. Speaking of, he's actually next on our list, right there at the top of, the 2011 or no, hang on. Why is this? Oh, that's because we're in the lockout season. There we go. I thought Basketball Reference was pulling a trick on me. And then I remembered that we had a lockout season for 2011, 2012. So, right there, we got Jeremy Lin at the top of the transaction list for the Rockets, guy that we were just talking about. And then another name that always throws me off that I kind of, you know, he's one of these surprise guys. It's like, oh, yeah, he was a Rocket. Samuel Dalembert.
Yep.
That one always throws me for a little bit of a loop.
Well, there was also the Brad Miller trade, right, where we traded Brad Miller and we drafted Nikola Mirotic. And we moved them for Johnny Flynn, Demo, and a 2012 second round pick, right?
That is true. That's actually right there. Hang on, that's on the last page. There we go. I missed that one right at the bottom. And that that was not too far after we actually hired Kevin McHale as the coach.
Yep.
So
yep.
Rick Adelman's time had come to an end with the Rockets, and they bring in Kevin McHale, kind of changing of the guard makes sense. You know, you bring in this kind of players coach to kind of maybe mold some of these younger guys into something more down the line. And, you know, we all kind of know how it all worked out with Kevin McHale,
right?
Unfortunately, but you know, I was a fan of the hire at the time. You know, Rick Adelman didn't make sense to me at the time of being, you know, a coach for a team that was this middling, you know, on the cusp team in the midst of a rebuild. Didn't quite make sense to have Rick Adelman there. And I don't think he really wanted to be there for a rebuild, unfortunately.
Yeah. For sure.
So we're looking at that, and then kind of that 2011-2012 season is such a weird season because of the lockout. You know, you think back to Johnny Flynn and how he didn't pan out, Hasheem Thabeet, he didn't pan out.
Yep.
You know, just kind of disappointment all around in that season. For sure. Right?
No doubt about it. Like you mentioned, I mean, there was a lot of hype around Johnny Flynn. But I think that trade was really about shedding Miller's salary, getting some future draft capital, and kicking the tires on the young, you know, lottery pick, former lottery pick, Johnny Flynn. Didn't quite work out, but that trade still ended up being very beneficial.
Yeah, definitely. You know, looking at what they were able to flip the likes of Johnny Flynn and Hashim Thabeet for, and this is always one of the ones that stings because, you know, you look at it and you're like, well, damn. But they traded Johnny Flynn, Hashim Thabeet, and a 2012 second-round pick, a pick that was later used to select Will Barton, to the Portland Trailblazers for Marcus Camby, another guy who's you know, a long list of Rockets defensive-minded centers. Marcus Camby, yep. the tail end of his career, I should say.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. But that trade still also, we'll get into this a little bit later, but that trade was pivotal for us down the line. We also moved, I think, Jordan Hill for Derek Fisher and a 2014 first-round pick, right?
We did. And then it kind of – we're rolling through this, and there's not much else that really happens that season. No other significant deals unless you want to look at Earl Boykins on two separate 10-day contracts as a you know, big-name signing. But then, you know, we get down to the next offseason, and Chase Budinger, who, you know, was a fan favorite for many years, you know, Air Bud, he and – oh, God, I don't even want to try and pronounce this name. Lior Eliyahu?
Yeah, and I don't remember that player playing for us. I think that might have been an overseas draft rights type of deal.
Might have been. But those two guys dealt in a deal for a 2012 first-round draft pick who became Terrence Jones.
Yep.
Love-hate relationship with Terrence Jones as a Houston Rocket.
That's a good way to put it.
He had some really nice highs and some really, really terrible lows with this team.
He did. He did. He had some, like you said, some nice highs. He just never quite developed or progressed into, you know, the player that it seemed like he always showed flashes or potential or signs that he could become this player, and it just never quite happened.
And we will wrap up part one coming up here in just a moment of our little domino effect series with Anthony Duckett from Space City Scoop. So you guys don't go anywhere. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Wrapping up our conversation, our part one conversation, I should say, with Anthony Duckett right now. You know, I'll always, though, he was a part of that team, though, that had the comeback against the Clippers. And so I don't really want to fault him for that because he was, you know, he hit that three at the tail end of the third quarter, I want to say it was, and that, you know, brought the Rockets within 10 or cut it right to 9, somewhere right around there. And so I you know, he'll always hold a special place in my heart because of that series, you know, that series of minutes of actions on the court that, you know, mounted in what was one of the greatest comebacks in history.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And Terrence Jones, he was a pretty good player for us. He had some good moments, some good games, that being one of them. So, yeah, you're right. That was a solid piece for us.
And so as we're kind of rolling through here, we've got the draft for this year and some important names in this draft. So we already spoke about Terrence Jones, but Jeremy Lamb and Royce White, two guys who, well, Royce White, not so much, unfortunately. You know, fear of flying and all that good stuff.
But there was so much hype around him. He was such a great player at Iowa State in college. It's kind of a shame we never got a chance to actually see him, you know, actually in action for us because of the concerns that he had or flying, things like that.
Didn't he go on to have he played some meaningful minutes with San Antonio, right? Wasn't it San Antonio or am I mixing him up with somebody else?
You know what? I don't actually remember much of Royce White's career. You probably are right about that.
Hang on. Let me see. No, it wasn't even San Antonio. There was another guy for San Antonio that I remember was like, maybe he wasn't compared to Royce White, but I feel like I would constantly get those two guys mixed up. And so he actually wound up only playing 3 games for the Kings, unfortunately. Didn't play any other games anywhere else. So that's, you know, kind of a big bummer there for Royce White. But Jeremy Lamb becomes an important piece in just a few months. A couple short months later, Jeremy Lamb becomes a pivotal piece in a huge trade. But there is one more trade that takes place before the end of this season, and that would be – hang on, who all
– was that Sam Dallenberg?
That was – yeah, that was Dallenberg and – oh, hang on. No, no, where'd it go?
So Dallenberg was also a part of a big trade.
It was the Dallenberg trade and cash as well as a first-round pick sent to the Milwaukee Bucks for Brockman, John Luehr, and Sean Livingston.
And the 12th pick in the draft, which became big because that was Jeremy Lamb.
Yes. And so that was the trade that took place right before the draft. And then the draft included Jeremy Lamb, Terrence Jones, and Royce White. So kind of a big draft for the Rockets that year with the 12th, the 16th, and the 18th picks.
Yeah, that was actually a great draft for us. It's not often that you see Daryl Morey use draft picks and actually draft players. But that year, I would say that was a really good draft. You know, you thought that Lamb, based on what you saw in college, of course, and based on kind of what happened with these guys' careers, well, especially with Lamb and Jones, you know, those are both good picks. White would have also been a good pick if we were able to get him in action. But, you know, going back to what you said about Jones, he did have a love-hate relationship. But, you know, to get a player like that at the 18th pick, you know, at the bottom of the draft, that was a solid pick.
Definitely. And I don't know how we missed the Kevin Martin trade, because I'm trying to go back and find where the Kevin Martin trade took place.
Well, that was – I think that was for McGrady, right? So we're doing 2010-11, but I think the Martin trade happened the year before that, right?
That did, but McGrady was still on that first team. Hang on, because that's kind of – because that's obviously a pivotal trade, and we got to get the origins of that trade lined up properly, because otherwise we can't do justice to the trade that really turned the franchise around. For so Kevin Martin was on that team. There it is. Why wasn't he starting that year? I remember earlier on when I had you guess the starting lineup for that that 2010-2011 team.
Yep.
Kevin Martin wasn't there in that starting lineup, so I'm trying to figure out, was he injured to start that year? Because I don't remember that being a thing.
Well, it looks like we got him. So we got him the 2009-2010 season in return for McGrady, which is before we actually started kind of rolling, but. At the same token, I don't know why he would have been starting in the 2010-2011 team. That's a good question.
See, and that's you know, we're going on 10 years now. My memory's a little fuzzy regarding this, but and I'm clicking through trying to find a team where he is starting, because he played, you know, a pretty significant role in the absence of McGrady.
So it looks like he did start for us in 2010-11. Looks like it was Lowry, Scola, Martin, Battier, and Chuck Hayes.
Huh. Okay. All right. So it wasn't the. There it is. Okay. So that was the year that Yao started to try to make his comeback.
Right. Right.
That's what it was. Okay. So it was the following year that. Hang on. We'll get this. We'll get this sorted out, because this is important. But he was definitely there, you know, definitely a member of the Rockets. And so that was the – and we want to make sure we're all correct on this. So that was the deal for McGrady, right? Him.
Right, right. February 2010.
Okay, all right. And so he's a member of the Rockets, and that's important for a pretty big reason that we'll move into in just a second. But something that I don't want to gloss over at all is – wanted to bring this back up again because Kevin Martin was rumored in a potential trade, and this potential trade could have completely changed the landscape of the NBA at large, was the Chris Paul trade that didn't happen, with the trade that would have landed him alongside Kobe Bryant in LA. And Pau Gasol actually would have become a Houston Rocket. That trade, you know, I do remember that trade back in the day, and I am really thankful that the trigger was not pulled on that trade, because the Rockets probably wouldn't have James Harden right now if it weren't for that trade being vetoed.
For sure. And I also don't know how well Gasol would have done, and especially initially. You know, we didn't really have a team of – we didn't have any star players, and I don't remember if we had any point guards to feed the ball to him. If I remember, I don't know that we did.
looking at that, so
Dragic still and Lowry. So I guess that would have been a pretty good duo.
They could have worked it in there, but I just, you know, he wouldn't have been the guy to build around is the problem. You know, he wasn't.
For sure.
He wasn't, you know, he was kind of in the middle of his prime or on the tail end of his prime right then, you know,
right.
Had already won the back-to-back chips with the Lakers.
Right.
You know, and I think that's maybe what they were looking is they were looking to get some type of a building block for the franchise to kind of grow with because nobody right. else had really panned out to be the new face.
For sure.
But the new face popped up not too long after that.
Yep.
With the trade that landed James Harden in a Houston Rockets jersey. And that's the one that I'm sure everybody remembers so fondly, you know, happening right before the start of the season. And let me grab my page here. I don't know.
Yeah,
why.
I was late in the off season. I was like September. I think that was like right before the season started.
Yeah. Extremely late in the off season. In fact, here it is. Yeah. It happened October 27th, 2012, the Rockets deal, Jeremy Lamb, Kevin Martin, and a 2013 first round draft pick, which later became Steven Adams. A 2013 second-round draft pick, which later became Alex Abrines, and a 2014 first-round draft pick, which became Mitch McGarry, to the OKC Thunder for Cole Aldrich, Daquan Cook, Lazar Hayward, and one James Edward Harden Jr.
What's interesting about that trade, so we also skip over the Kyle Lowry. We traded Lowry to Toronto. We got back Gary Forbes in the 2013 first-round pick. 2015 second round pick as well. Tony Douglas was in the Camby deal, right? Tony Douglas
was in the Camby deal. You're right. That was earlier that summer. I jumped the gun there a little bit getting to the Beards trade. But the Lowry trade before that.
Well, the only reason why I bring that up is because, you know, when you look back at what all we gave up the first round pick we got back in that Lowry deal, which became Steven Adams. The first round pick we gave up in the Jordan Hill, Derek Fisher trade, which became Mitch McGarry. And the second round pick we gave up in the – sorry, second round pick we got back in the Courtney Lee deal, which became Alex Abrines. So all in all, if you look at what all the players that we traded to land the draft picks that we included in that Harden trade, Sam Dallenberg, Jordan Hill, Courtney Lee, Kyle Lowry, and Chase Budinger, all of those – became key because Budinger trade landed Jeremy Lamb, who we also traded and included in that deal. So a massive trade, lots of players that changed hands, many different subsets of trades that led to that one. But again, you know, I'm not convinced OKC does that deal again today.
No, definitely not. I think that's one of the deals that you look back on and OKC is absolutely kicking themselves for letting James Harden, you know, walk away over, what was it, like $5 million that they didn't want to pay him or something like that?
Which is crazy. I think I read that they gave him an hour to sign that contract or an hour to agree to a number that was below the max, right?
Yeah, and for a guy that was, you know, as important to them as he was, you know, right. that just they thought that they could get away with him, you know, or with cheaping out and, you know, getting a, you know, at the time, what was maybe a comparable replacement in Kevin Martin, but we obviously know how things kind of panned out with James and how, you know, it's crazy that the OKC had, you know, three future MVPs altogether yeah. under one roof and
right.
weren't able to maintain them.
Well, it seemed like they thought that they could replace Harden with Martin and Jeremy Lamb, you know, which is comical, but it seems like they really thought that.
Definitely. And kind of we're rolling through the rest of this, and I don't really see and I don't remember any other significant deals kind of looking through this season. And it just kind of, you know, but that was the first season where the Rockets really had a renewed hope, right? You know,
for
I don't
sure.
think anybody expected James Harden to come in and be – the player that he was. Now, you know, there was promise there. There was a high ceiling, but
for
you know,
sure.
he came in and to drag the Rockets to the eighth seed and to, you know,
yep.
take two games off of the Thunder that year really showed a lot of promise moving forward.
Right. And what's interesting is, you know, right before that trade took place, the Rockets signed Jeremy Lin. And at that time, you know, there was no – I mean, I think at that point, we already had traded Lowry. I think Gordon – had already walked. So you signed Lin thinking, okay, this is our star. This is our guy. Then, you know, a few months later, you end up getting Harden too, you know?
Yeah. Now that was a fun backcourt duo. But the real star power came later that summer,
yes.
with, again, guy with an interesting history here in Houston, a guy who, you either loved him, or most people, unfortunately hated him, I guess. And just kind of the way that he left, and just, again, the rift that grew between he and Harden. But Dwight Howard picked up that offseason. And I remember being over the moon that the Rockets got Dwight Howard. Yes. that was such a big signing to be able to pair him with James Harden. Like, they were supposed to run the West, right?
They were, right. And like you said, there was a lot of excitement, a lot of hype, and rightfully so. I mean, the Dwight Howard that we were getting, I do think that his best days were maybe a little bit, tad bit behind him, but he was still a solid contributor. I mean, I think that Lakers team he was on, I think he led the league in rebounds, I want to say, that year with the Lakers, that one year he played there.
He was never really right after that back injury, wasn't quite it was never really the Orlando Dwight again.
Right.
But he was still dominant, and no doubt. I guess that's one of the lesser what ifs is, if he had just bought into his role as, a pick and roll lob threat, he would have been what Clint Capella has been, or had been for the past, few seasons with the Rockets. He would have been that, but, a more beefed up version of that with better defense. And, you can only imagine how good he could have been in a Rockets jersey if he had just maybe tampered his ego a little bit and not been so determined to, put his back to the basket and power down opposing defenders.
Right, and this is a little bit different, but, kind of what you're saying is if Dwight Howard would have been able to embrace his role like he has done now in L.A., again, this is well past. He's at that point, he had been already on several different teams, prior to this season. But just the point is, if he was able to embrace his role and accept, his place on the team like he's done now, I think that Rockets team, I won't say the Rockets team, but I would say I think that duo of Harden and Dwight Howard could have really had a lot more moments.
Definitely. It pains me that they weren't able to, to do more as that duo, because they really should have been able to do more, but they also have these clashing personalities that, yeah, they had similar personalities in the fact that neither of them really wanted to confront the problems, in the locker room during that down season. And
for sure,
they just, neither one of them wanted to be the vocal leader. You had, goofy Dwight Howard and kind of the more reserved James Harden, who,
right,
lets his play kind of do the talking, which doesn't really work when you're supposed to be the leader of the team.
And a lot of that, I think, goes on Mikal. I think that the coach, should be, I would say, making sure those conversations happen, or at least, addressing them. And that also wasn't really Mikal's deal either. That wasn't really his personality type.
Yeah, and I mean, we kind of know how that first season played out. The 0.9 seconds, the loss against the Trailblazers. Yeah, just.
But you know what, though, I will say that was still a good team, very entertaining team. I think they were the fourth seed, I want to say, year.
They were the fourth seed that year with the Blazers locked into the fifth seed. Yeah, they were competitive. They were fun. But didn't get it done. And apart from a lot of sending Robert Covington down to the RGV Vipers, not much else going on that year in the way of signings or transactions. Trading Aaron Brooks.
Well, so a couple things I want to say in the first year of Dwight is we signed Pat Bev midway through that year, I want to say. Or was that the first Harden year, 12-13?
It should have been the first Harden year, because that first year with Dwight, Pat Bev was already signed with the team.
Okay, so I guess I'm going back to the year before. We signed Pat Bev, and then we traded Marcus Morris for a 2013 second-round pick. That, to me, we already discussed it, but that was, we were discussing what if you got Kawhi instead of Marcus Morris. But, we ended up trading Morris altogether within, 2 years of him being on the team, which is like, man, what if we got the Morris that's playing now, right?
Yeah, I mean, even he would have been, you know, an upgrade compared to, you know, the Morris they were sitting on. And I guess another kind of random signing from that year, right, is Ronnie Brewer, you know, was there. and they did also bring back in Marcus Camby temporarily. So, you know, some random signings there. Omri Caspi, another guy. Kostas Papanikolaou, who, you know, was acquired in a trade for Thomas Robinson. So some throwback names there for Rockets fans. They might not have been a big part of that team, but always some fun names to throw around. And a guy who did become a big part of the team, though, later that summer, Clint Capela, drafted June 26, 2014, first round, pick number 25.
Again, you know, going back to, you know, we talked about Terrence Jones being 18th pick and finding good value late in the draft. Capela is a great example of that. I mean, 25th pick, you know, you don't really know what you're getting at pick number 25 in the NBA draft, but for it to turn into Capela, that was a great find.
All right. One more time for Anthony Duckett. You can follow him on Twitter at @A_Duckett. Again, he is the site co-expert for Space City Scoop. So part two of this show will be out immediately. So go check that out if you guys enjoyed part one. And as always, thank you all so much for listening. And we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.